Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Sydney's early closing laws, introduced in 2014, were a controversial move which met resistance from patrons and businesses within the King's Cross Entertainment Precinct. But research since, including a new study on orbital fractures published on 26th of February by the MJA, suggests that the laws are reducing alcohol-related harms. Associate Professor Diana Edgerton-Warburton is Director of Emergency Medicine Research at Monash Health in Melbourne. She is also the clinical lead of the Australian College of Emergency Medicine's Alcohol Harm Project. She has written an editorial, also published today by the MJA, and she is my special guest on the pod today. What impact does alcohol have on Australian emergency departments generally?
Well, we know from our research, which was published recently in Addiction, which is the biggest study internationally of alcohol harm in the emergency department, that it's likely to contribute to about 500,000 presentations to Australian EDs every year.
Yeah, but it doesn't just affect the patients themselves, does it? I mean, their behaviour has an effect as well.
Yeah, so we had a paper published in the MJA which demonstrated that 9 out of 10 emergency clinicians, so doctors and nurses, had experienced alcohol-related violence and aggression or threats of it in the last year. So we know that it's virtually ubiquitous for emergency doctors. We know from our research that it affects the care of other patients, and it affects the safety and the feeling of security of both staff and other patients.
The Liquor Amendment Act came in the King's Cross Entertainment Precinct in 2014, and it involves, you know, lockout laws, early closing, the early stoppage of selling of alcohol. Which part of that act has been the most effective in terms of ED presentations?
Well, the international evidence and local evidence from Newcastle would suggest that it's really the early closing that is critical.
Right.
We know that licensing jurisdictions really have a cap that they can turn on and off with alcohol harm. So if they want to reduce serious assaults and injuries, reduce the number of police required, reduce the number of patients presenting to emergency departments, early closing will be the single most effective method.
Now, your editorial coincides with some research that's been published in the MJA by Holmes et al, who found that orbital fractures were reduced by 10% after 2 years after the lockout laws, and it saved almost $465,000 a year. And that's on top of Gordian Fuldy's research that showed that 25% of alcohol-related injuries at St Vincent's disappeared in the first 12 months after the lockout laws. What's your take on all of that, and how do you think government should proceed on the back of this evidence?
Well, I believe that we need to have a national plan with this and consistency across the jurisdictions. And I think that we should follow Queensland's lead of introducing this across the state. I think that it really is doctors, both emergency physicians, particularly surgeons, in this case, people dealing with orbital fractures, faith and maxilla surgeons, they really are powerful witnesses of this human tragedy, this tide of human tragedy that we're seeing across Australia. And we have a simple way of addressing it. It doesn't have to result in a dull nighttime economy. It's been demonstrated in Newcastle that there's actually increased diversity of small and lively venues. What we don't want is basically liquor bars open till all hours of the morning, resulting in these injuries. You can still have a vibrant nighttime economy. You can still have a vibrant nighttime entertainment. We can demonstrate this internationally. We're the same as, you know, where in places like the whole of California, there's early closing, and in many European cities. I don't think that having 24/7 access to alcohol is a necessity for a vibrant nighttime economy.
In 2016, there was a review of the laws and a couple of parts of it were relaxed in terms of how late things could stay open and how late people could sell alcohol. Have you seen any effect of that yet? Has there been any uptick in presentations or injuries?
I think that would require a very big study over a long period of time to get that degree of calibration on half an hour. But I think what we know, especially from the international study, was a big study in from Norway that looked at opening hours over a 10-year period over 18 cities. And it basically demonstrated that in both directions, anywhere between a 16 and 20% reduction per hour in opening hours after 1 a.m. So if you increase the opening hours, you increase serious assaults and injuries by 16%. Likewise, if you reduce it, you reduce it. Their study actually showed movement in both directions within the same city over a 10-year period. So it really demonstrates with a strong level of evidence that any increase in access to alcohol will result in increased injuries, increased violent patients and increased violence to paramedics and to ED staff.
You mentioned also in your editorial that we don't collect quite enough data in emergency departments. What would you like to see done in terms of the information we can glean from patients when they come in?
Yeah, well, I think this is a very powerful opportunity because emergency clinicians know that all the legislation and requirements in regards to licensed venues, not selling alcohol to intoxicated patrons. We know, we see this every day, that that's being flouted. And in Cardiff in the UK, they've demonstrated that if you have collect comprehensive data on where last drinks were occurred, particularly in licensed venues, you can intervene on a local level. So police, ambulance, local councils, hospitals can work together to actually inform licensed venues of the fact that their patrons are being injured and ending up in the emergency department. And this has been shown to significantly reduce, be very highly cost-effective and reduce serious assaults and injuries presenting to EDs around the UK. And we need to collect data. Currently, all the national data sets woefully underestimate the amount of alcohol harm because of the fact that most people don't present intoxicated per se, they present with injuries and usually they're coded just for one reason. So all the coding-based studies grossly underestimate the number of presentations. And that was really the power of our study in addiction.
Yes.
Because in our addiction paper, really the first time internationally, we looked at the true burden of alcohol harm presenting to ED. So we looked at people that presented primarily with intoxication, and we looked at people with injuries that were alcohol-related. But we also looked at people that were injured by a third party then presented to the ED. And that data has been collected in our national snapshots, but other than that, has never been collected internationally.
Would that be an onerous task for ED staff?
This has gone through through the College for Emergency Medicine. This has been put to emergency specialists. I think it's important to, in 2009 when I took over as chair of the Public Health Committee, I convened a meeting and I got emergency physicians together and trainees. Over 300 people came together to discuss public health and emergency medicine. And I asked them to prioritise what was their most important public health priority that we could address at the college. And unanimously, they came down with alcohol harm. So emergency clinicians see the problem every day. And really, they're sick of putting band-aids over it. They want to have some sort of solution. So we have a college policy now that suggests that alcohol harm should be added to the national minimum data set. And not only would we have the information about the burden of disease more accurately, but we would also be able to have a powerful measure of any policy intervention. So anyone that intervenes, such as plans in the Northern Territory for changes to their to reducing alcohol harm, jurisdictions could measure those changes in a very sensitive and timely fashion if we were collecting this data.
This legislation has been left to state governments. Does the federal government need to get involved? Should they get involved? And if so, what do we do next?
Well, I think that all jurisdictions and the federal government should be working together, and they are in terms of the national alcohol strategy, which they're working on together as a collaborative document. And I think that the federal government can obviously work on pricing, particularly volumetric taxing, and we need to work together on sponsorship and advertising, particularly in sport. So that's a key area. It was a number of years ago that the ANA president said that our national sporting heroes should not be walking alcohol ads. And we know that there was recent relaxation in the code of practice, which allows increased exposure to our children to alcohol ads during live sporting events. So it's really urgently required that we change that loophole. In the same way as people, the general public are concerned about this, they're concerned about gambling and they're concerned about alcohol ads in sport. And we need to, it's going to be, in a number of years, we're going to look back and see the pictures of alcohol advertising just as an anathema as the pictures of tobacco.
Would you like to see lockout laws in Melbourne?
Look, I'd prefer not to use the phrase lockout. They haven't actually helped. So in Victoria, there was a trial and it was evaluated but never published in peer review. And the trial only went for 6 months and was dramatically flawed. Gordian Fulde's study of the effect of the early closing in King's Cross area demonstrated that you really need to study for at least 12 months because it does take time for these changes to occur. And so there was actually no change, I don't think, if you study in the first 6 months. So it really does take time for the community to work together to address this issue. And so that's always been cited in Victoria as a reason not to introduce early closing or lockout laws in Victoria. But as I say, the study was flawed the evaluation was flawed.
Yeah.
And the trial was flawed in that 25% of the venues got exemptions. So you actually ended up with concentrated drinking.
Yes.
And I think what Sydney demonstrates is, and Newcastle demonstrates, is the whole early closing is not about an individual time frame or an individual action.
Mm.
It really has to be a whole of community and a whole of government approach. So you do need to make sure everything is in place in terms of public transport and the timing that occurs. You know, you have to have the take-out venues closing as well, and you have to have the community behind the project, and then you get the sort of dramatic results. So, you know, emergency clinicians really are so sick of those tragic anecdotes where we have to talk to families, you know, their children being brain dead after one-punch injuries, and it was really Gordian Fulde's study that showed that it's those serious assaults and injuries that have reduced after this lockout. Well, there is nothing cosmopolitan happening on the streets of Sydney after 3 a.m.
Thanks.
Okay.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.